To save the endangered Delta smelt, federal judge Oliver Wanger turned off the water to California's San Joaquin Valley. This put tens of thousands out of work and turned hundreds of thousands of acres into dust. But then along comes Mary, who says, save the smelt, save California, turn the water back on.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 717th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, to save a tiny 2-inch fish called the Delta smelt, federal judge, district judge Oliver Wanger ordered the water to be turned off to California's Central Valley, or at least the San Joaquin part of it, which is the southern part of it. As a consequence of this order, billions of dollars have been lost, tens of thousands have been forced out of work, and hundreds of thousands of acres have been turned to dust. And yet the Delta smelt still are in decline. Then along comes Mary, who one day stopped to buy a melon from a roadside stand in the San Joaquin Valley. She asked the seller, who was dressed like a Bedouin in a sandstorm, if it was normal for there to be so much dust in the air. Oh no, the seller said. They turned off our water to save a fish. This experience led Mary, who had some time on her hands, to begin asking questions like, is the Delta smelt really an endangered species? What is the real reason for the decline of salmon, steelhead, and smelt? Why do Delta smelt swim 50 miles up the Sacramento and San Joaquin rivers, through a man-made channel, into a man-made lake, to get caught up in a man-made pump? Why, after turning off that pump, are the Delta smelt still in decline? And finally, can the Delta smelt and California's San Joaquin Valley be saved by turning the pumps back on? Here to tell us what kind of answers she found to her questions, we have Mary herself. Mary is Dr. Mary Winfrey, retired primary research scientist with the United States of America. Dr. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
So happy to have you aboard, and I've certainly been enjoying our conversations here in the past week, and we hope our audience will come to know you as well. Today, you're going to bring a different word about what we've done to the San Joaquin Valley. You're going to be, I guess, the opposing viewpoint to the dominant viewpoint, which is now in force via Federal District Judge Wanger, who said turn the water off, and Dr. Mary is saying turn the water back on. So before we get into your explanation here, just exactly who is Dr. Mary Winfrey? She's a retired research specialist, a research scientist with the United States of America. Is that true?
That's correct. I did 10 years active duty with the Air Force as a scientist / engineer. At that time, I was an enlisted scientist, and I was the first one to re-up in my career field. Then after I got my PhD, I worked at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds and at Livermore and Sandia National Laboratories.
Now, as a research scientist for the United States of America, you hold some very interesting patents, and you've also done some very interesting work. Let's start with how you brought Dow Chemical to its knees over Agent Orange.
Well, I wouldn't say we brought it to its knees. We just brought it to an understanding and an agreement. We looked at Dow Chemical's own research to try and get a better understanding of what symptoms and what problems might develop if a person were exposed to it, particularly a military person.
As in the Vietnam War.
As in the Vietnam War, because at that time there was a general belief that people who said, I have symptoms, it was made up in their head. It was an imaginary thing. But we wanted to make sure because we had Air Force pilots involved. And what we found was that the research, the original data, had some flaws in it. We were told that the herbicide caused no more effects in rabbits than would be found in normal control animals. Well, I looked at the raw data, and I looked at the data on the controls, and I found dead rabbits. That really surprised me, because these were young, two-year-old male rabbits. They should have no death rates. This should be a young, healthy group. And instead, there were dead rabbits. So I called up the technicians who were working on the project and said, you've got some dead control animals. What happened there? And they said, oh, we had a roof leak, and then the rabbits got sick. So I was able to say, well, according to your research then, the herbicide is no more harmful than a roof leak and a bad disease killing off your rabbits. And Dow was somewhat embarrassed about allowing this to be published. And the long and the short of it was they settled out of court, and they admitted that some of the herbicide had been scorched, and they didn't think that it would be a problem because we were not using it for grass management in fields. And in the long run, the VA decided that they could treat definite and specific illnesses related to exposure, that it was not imaginary, it was very real. And we were able to not only get treatment for the herbicide, but for some of the byproducts that accidentally appeared in the mixes. If you scorched it, you got dioxins and PCBs.
All the bad stuff. So, Mary, you're a person who knows how to ask questions that other people seem to miss. And because of this ability to ask questions, in your tour of duty with the United States of America, you picked up some patents that are now owned by the government. You developed WAIS, a patent for detecting plastic landmines.
That is correct. Five other researchers. You don't do this on your own. You do it as a team.
Well, okay, but let me go on here. And you developed patent for detecting anthrax in envelopes?
Well, in this case, it was actually biologicals of any sort.
Okay. Let me go on because this is getting to where we want to go with. You are a person that knows how to ask questions, and what led you to ask the question about the Delta smelt?
There seemed to be relatively little biology involved in the situation, and a lot of interesting questions. For example, the Delta smelt is considered a threatened species. That's a legal definition. A group of lawyers and a judge decided that in 1993 it was a threatened species. But there was a question about the species itself.
Did anybody ask that question?
Apparently not, and if they had, they might have gotten a few laughs. McAllister named the Delta smelt. He decided it was not a pond smelt, and he gave it a name. And he called it hypomesis, which means below the line, the measurement line, or smelt. That's the name for all smelts, is hypomesis. Transpacificus. Transpacificus means across or around the Pacific. In other words, this was a smelt found around the Pacific. And to make sure that you knew this, the Delta smelt, specifically the Delta smelt, he named Hypomyces transpacificus transpacificus. The Delta smelt found around the Pacific.
Which is to say, around the Pacific, then.
You do find Hypomyces transpacificus in the Mekong Delta. They raise it and harvest it in Korea. They raise it for caviar in Japan. And as a matter of fact, they, back in, I believe it was 1959, we were running low on our native smelt. They had put in a lot of salmon, and the salmon really like it. And to make the salmon happy, they brought in several billion eggs from Japan, and they released them, and they hatched into Hypomyces transpacificus. They renamed it Nipponensis, so you would know it was from Japan. Well, the two smelts met each other, and they fell in love. Now, the smelt only lives about 1 year. But here we are, 40 and 50 years later, and there are lots and lots of hybrids. There's a whole rainbow of different hybrids.
Now, Mary, we're going to have to take a quick break, but I want you to pick this up with the rainbow and relate how that, how they came up with an endangered species from that rainbow of fish. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about the Delta smelt and the water that has been turned off to the San Joaquin Valley and the tens of thousands of people who have lost their job and the land that's being turned to dust. With Mary, Dr. Mary Winfrey, along comes Mary and you. If you'd like to talk with us today, the phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. You know, in some years ago, the federal district judge turned the water off to the San Joaquin Valley in order to provide enough water for the tiny little 2-inch-long fish called the Delta smelt. And so everybody went along with it, and we turned the water off, and consequently, tens of thousands lost their jobs in the San Joaquin Valley. Hundreds of thousands of acres have really been turned to dust. And yet the Delta smelt keep dying. Why is that? Then along came Mary, who asked that question. Why is that? And so we're talking with Mary today. Her name is Dr. Mary Winfrey. She's a retired primary research scientist for the United States of America. And Mary, we're talking a little bit about whether the Delta smelt is, in fact, an endangered species. Here's a fish that has been hybridized with other smelt from around the world, around the Pacific. And so it's kind of like there are a rainbow of varieties of smelt. So is the Delta smelt, in fact, endangered?
Well, let's call it, well, first of all, it is considered threatened legally. That's a legal definition. And that was in 1993, a judge declared it threatened. Biologically, it's an endangered subspecies. It's not really a species. A species is defined as a group of animals that can breed successfully together. For example, if you have a dog and a cat and you try and mate them, they do not have any offspring. There's no puppies.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they're a different species. Now, you can take a horse and a donkey, and you get a sterile mule. They're both belong to the group, the genetic. They're both equus.
Okay.
But they are genetically different enough that their offspring cannot reproduce. But you can take a Hereford milk cow and a Black Angus beef cow, and you can crossbreed them, and you produce calves that can have can mate with all the other types of cows there are. They are a species. The fact that our smelt can breed successfully with Hypomyces transpacificus from overseas says that the Delta smelt is a subspecies or a variety.
Okay. So when we're talking about legal definitions then, we can't really say that the Delta smelt is an endangered species because it's not a species.
Well, biologically, it's not a species. But legally, because a judge and jury decided, or at least a judge did, it is considered a threatened species. And its numbers are going down. And since it only lives for 1 year, it's considered a canary for the Delta.
And which is to say that the Delta is in trouble.
The Delta is in trouble.
Okay.
Or at least the smelt is in trouble.
Yes. Now, that is an interesting point, too, and I want to pick that up just a little bit. But first I want to go to what is the real reason for the decline of salmon, steelhead, and their tiny little cousin, the smelt?
Well, I had to ask that question because while the smelt was disappearing out in the Delta, there were other fish in the Delta that were not in trouble. The green sturgeon and the bass, their populations were going up. The sturgeon's a bottom feeder and the bass is a top feeder. So if it were simply pollution or a simple explanation, all the fish ought to go down. Instead, only the trout, the salmon, the steelheads, and the smelt, which belong to the salmon family, they're a salmonoid, were going down. And what I found was a virus.
Now, you found this virus. Did anybody else find this virus?
Oh, definitely. That's how I found out about it. In 2001, the virus, which came from Russia and was brought in by waterbirds, hit Alaska. It knocked out 17 hatcheries, and it got approximately 75% to 85% of the wild salmon of all different species. It got them in fresh water, and it got them in seawater. This virus moved down the coast. In 2003, it was in British Columbia. In 2005, it was on the Sacramento River and the Klamath. And in 2006, Nimbus Hatchery, which is our big steelhead producer, lost something like 2 million babies in a very, very short time, which they attributed to high water levels and salmon virus. This virus has now moved on down the coast and is taking out the third largest salmon hatchery complex and natural salmon in Chile.
Well, Mary, what we were told is that there were farmers using too much water.
It wasn't a water problem, or it would have affected the other fish. Now, up in Alaska, they didn't have the dams, and they didn't have a water flow problem, but they lost salmon. British Columbia did not have a flow problem, and they didn't have problems with warmer waters, although they had the same situation that would be on the Klamath. When they lost fish on the Klamath, it wasn't because of the dams. It was because of the virus. And the virus is a trackable, and one of the sad things is that there didn't seem to be much communication between the hatcheries, so that as each one got it, they were blamed for being non-hygienic or using the wrong practices, when it was actually things that they had used for the last, nearly 100 years. They've been doing trout farming since 1870, right here in California. So it was the practices had worked right up until the virus hit.
And the virus just moved like a slow-burning fire from Alaska all the way down the coast, and now it's way down there in South America. Are the salmon starting to come back from this?
Yes.
They are.
In Alaska, they're starting to get some good salmon runs finally. And for this year, we finally had a decent steelhead run. This is the first year the steelheads have started to come back. This means that the virus has burned its way through. And now we're seeing recovery.
Now, was this virus figured in the calculations with respect to turning the water off to the San Joaquin Valley?
They didn't even think about it. They never asked about it. They thought that because they had turned off agricultural pumps about 12 years ago down at Susan, when they had a problem with seawater invading, they thought that turning off pumps would solve any kind of problem on the Sacramento. And so, since it worked down at Susanville for their salt water that would work for the smelt up in the Delta. And regrettably, it didn't. We've had the pumps off for off and on almost 3 years now. We've had them off during high water and during low water, and the smelt continued to decline. As a matter of fact, turning off the pumps may have...
Well, hold that thought, and take me back to the calculations for this incredible decision to turn off the water. You're saying that there was nobody came to the table and said this could be caused by a virus?
That was not even considered. And I was vaguely aware of the virus because, wearing a different hat than research, I had gone up with my Air Guard unit to Alaska in 2001, and being the new person on base, they stuck me with the rather unpleasant job of looking at the dead fish. They reported there were dead salmon on base, and could they eat them? And I said, no, don't eat them. Let's go look at them. And my first thought was there had been a spill, or maybe they were poisoned. But we could find no records or chemical evidence, no chemical fingerprints of anything that could have hurt them. When we went off base, there were also dead salmon. So I went over to a fish hatchery, and I asked the hatchery master, do you know anything about dead fish? And he says, I don't want to talk to you.
And just a sec. We have to hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. Dr. Mary is with us today. Dr. Mary Winfrey, retired primary research scientist for the United States of America. What on earth happened to the fish? It wasn't the water, says Mary. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, folks, we're up in Alaska. We're walking the beach, and there are dead salmon everywhere. But luckily, we have Dr. Mary Winfrey with us, who is a research scientist with the United States of America, and she's looking at these fish. And what does she see, Mary?
She sees the hatchery master and says, do you know anything about dead fish? And he said, I don't want to talk to you because I have lost all my hatchlings. He says, and it's not my fault. It's not uncleanliness. It was a virus. It was brought in by water birds. We lost them, we restarted them, and we lost them again. And that's when I found out that there were 17 hatcheries that had been affected by this.
And it wasn't because of lack of water.
No. And it wasn't because the water was warm or cold or polluted. It was because of a virus. And that's an important thing. And then we realized that it was hitting British Columbia when some of the group that were trying to keep the water turned off said that they had to have the water off to save the endangered orcas, that there were orcas down in the Delta. Well, that really surprised us. Killer whales are not a normal species for the Delta. But we thought something must have given them this idea. And I had a friend, Sue Miller, who's with the Los Lobos Marine Preserve, and she tracks whales. And she recognized the pod. There were orcas down in the bay. They had come down looking deformed, as if they had peanut-shaped heads, because they were starving. They had lost so much body fat that they had changed shape. And we found out this was because there were no salmon. They would normally be feeding and fattening on salmon. They did not belong to the Delta. They were just down there looking for anything. And they ended up, that particular pod, off of the area near Hearst Castle, and they fed on baby elephant seals, which are an endangered species.
Right. So the solution to all of this disappearing salmon has always been turn off the water.
Regrettably, yes.
Okay, let's take us down to the Delta now. Why do Delta smelt swim 50 miles up the Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers through man-made channel into a man-made lake to get caught up in a man-made pump?
It appears that the pump was actually, it's been there for years.
How long?
Well, early on, when they started the Delta system, it goes back 60 years.
Okay, so the pump has been there six decades.
But they have, of course, renewed pumps, put in newer ones, so that at least for the current one is at least 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But during this time, what the pumps did was important. The pumps carried fresh drinking-grade water, minimum treatment needed to clean it up, across gravel and reed beds where there are plants, and they created a current that was a natural hatchery. If you study salmon and trout hatching in hatcheries, you find that what they do to keep the eggs viable, to keep them alive, is you move currents of water across them. And apparently the smelt was able to recognize good conditions. We can look at how they breed the caviar in Japan and look at how they set up breeding conditions, and they can even get their little smelt to lay their eggs on reed mats by having the right temperature and water conditions.
So what we did is, in building this pump to pump water uphill into the San Joaquin Valley, we created the perfect spawning grounds for Delta smelt.
At least the smelts thought so, because they would keep returning there. And one of the reasons for turning the pump off was they reported that baby fish were getting caught in the pump. That meant they had been laying eggs nearby. Now, the pump does not pull water 50 miles away. Those fish had to be right there and local. And it looks like what happened when they turned off the pump was they turned off the hatchery. And they need to keep the pump on. Why? During the summer, there's no fish laying eggs. But you need the pump on to keep the bottom clean and oxygenated. Otherwise, algae and bacteria grow in there. The lake becomes stagnant. The eggs cannot be laid in dirty, bacteria-filled, stagnant water.
So
they needed to keep the pumps on and leave them on, because this had been, for 60 or more years, part of the smelt's cycle.
So essentially, we, in the plumbing of our San Joaquin Valley, built the perfect smelt hatchery, and the smelt took advantage of that for 60 years and went there, swam all the way up. That's 50 miles, a long way for a 2-inch
long. This is a weak swimming fish, and it's swimming against the current of the Sacramento River.
So the smelt really wanted to go to this pump just to lay its eggs.
That is correct. And they have had put in salvage sections where they could recapture the fish. They would release them further down, and they would come back up. They liked that area. They are a member of the salmon family. They remember where they successfully bred before, and they try and return to it.
Just like people, huh?
Like people. Once they learn, that's what they do. And it also helped the other canals where they were breeding, because there was a little flow there. When you cut off the pump, the great beating heart of the Delta stops.
And what happens to the smelt that go there to breed?
Well, apparently it had not been successful. The pump has been off, and the fish levels continue to drop. There's still a chance to save them. But we'll need to set things back in order. We need to get the pumps back on. They do need to clean up pollution. They do have problems with...
Let me go back up just a little bit. Now, have you pointed out this interesting observation of yours to any of the powers that be with respect to turning the water off? Have you gone to them and said, excuse me, judge, excuse me, jury? But there's this interesting fact about the pump that you just turned off, which is that it's where the smelt go to breed. Have you put that on the table?
I have suggested it to a few people, but there hasn't been too much interest in it. They felt that it was more politically expedient to continue the law as it is currently being played out. Although that has been an interesting thing in itself. Feinstein was able to restore 25% of the water to the farmer, and according to Acosta and a couple of other congressmen out in the valley, and they came on public radio and explained it, this was in exchange for their vote for Obamacare.
Okay, hold that. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. We're talking with Dr. Mary Winfrey, a retired primary research scientist for the United States of America. We're talking about the water that we have turned off to the San Joaquin Valley. We're talking about the lost jobs, the lost land, and it looks like the lost Delta smelt because of our turning off the water. You are invited to participate, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Call, give us a ring. So we turned off the water to the San Joaquin Valley, turned the pumps off in response to Judge Wanger's order, and yet the Delta smelt still keep dying, and it might just possibly be because they needed the pump to keep the spawning beds clean and serviceable.
We could turn it back on and find out, couldn't we?
Legally,
we need to, because the law states that all things to save an endangered species must be done. And this may be exactly what it needs. By the way, we shouldn't be too hard on Judge Wanger. Judge Wanger did do some positive things. Back in May 27th of 2010, he looked at the biological opinion that had been used to turn the water off, and he determined that it was not scientifically justified. I've got at least a note here that said that it did not use the best available science, and that the biological opinion inflicted great material harm to humans and to the human environment based on mere guesstimations.
And so?
So even the judge is beginning to question the reasoning that went behind turning the water off.
But before the break, you talked about how politicians are able to get more water for political reasons.
Well, they were at least able to expedite getting some of the water on, and it was better than nothing.
Yes,
people were desperate.
Wouldn't that indicate that there's something just not quite right about what's being done? If what they say, they have to have the water turned off to save the Delta smelt, which does not appear to be true, but if that is true, how do they come up with a political reason to get around that when there is no economic reason or sound,
because
nothing else works?
A lawsuit was sent through the courts which claimed that they had to do everything that was possible to save the smelt. And they proposed turning the pumps off under this law. The same law, which is to protect the smelt, should be employed to turn the pumps back on to save it, and not only save the smelt, but save a lot of other endangered species. No one ever looked to see where the water was going. They just looked at shutting the pump off. They didn't look at the 400 miles that the water travels. The water also goes not just to farmers and homes and factories, but to wetlands, bird refuges, and lakes. It goes right under the Pacific Flyway, which is the largest migratory route for birds going back and forth between Alaska and South America. And these birds use this water. When they turned the water off, it killed frogs. And this is one of the first things I actually noticed back over at towards Lemoore. The farmers were pumping water into holding ponds and then moving that into their fields. But the holding ponds had reed beds, and I went in and looked at one of them and saw that it had dried up to the point that the mud had cracked, and embedded in the mud were little-legged tadpoles that had tried to escape the drying by burrowing into the mud. They looked like raisins pressed in there, and they were all dead. This meant that turning the water off had hit the amphibian population for 400 miles. We looked at water birds as well at the bird refuge and found that it seemed to be impacting the brown pelicans, the sandhill cranes, the ospreys, the eagles, and the little marsh wrens. All of these are endangered species protected by the same law that protects the smelt. If we really wanted to follow the law as it's written, we would turn the water back on for them. And one of the saddest cases was the kit foxes. If you look at where the kit fox occurs, it occurs right along the canal there. That's where the populations are. And they even built a kit fox preserve, specially along the canal. Now, the kit fox does not drink water, doesn't have to. It gets it out of its food, except at one critical period. When the mother fox is nursing, she needs to drink water. When she's lactating, she needs fresh water. They turned the pumps off when the pups were in the dens. If there was really a concern for endangered species, it should have been then.
And it didn't happen, did it?
No, and it didn't happen to the point that we had an ecological disaster. Not only did we lose endangered animals, the land dried up. Salt and selenium moved upward through the soil. One of the reasons the farmers had put the canals in originally was to supply fresh water to a wetland wildlife preserve, because without the pumps on, the selenium had been killing water birds.
Right.
By putting the pumps on and moving fresh water there, they preserved the bird life. And this had been shut off.
So everything that we've done that's been good in the San Joaquin Valley has turned to bad because we're trying to save a little tiny 2-inch fish that, in all actuality, we seem to be killing because of our good intentions.
We're killing a lot of things with kindness.
Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Dr. Mary Winfrey. And when we come back, we're going to ask the big question, which is, can we save the smelt and California by turning the pumps back on? Right back. Well, we tried to save a little 2-inch long fish, and in the process of trying to save that fish, we put tens of thousands of people out of work, dried up hundreds of thousands of acres of land, threatened who knows how many species of wildlife in the southern San Joaquin Valley, a complete and utter disaster. Can we reverse this disaster by turning the pumps back on, Mary Winfrey?
There's a reasonable chance. There may still be enough populations of the smelt left in the delta that if we return the conditions to normal, they can recover. At the same time, moving the water down the canal would help the endangered species that the water has been supporting. And it would help the economy of California. Without farm production, there were no agricultural taxes. And so the state lost millions in agricultural taxes. One of the reasons that our students have had to pay higher tuition to go to college, and they put that on them very suddenly, was there was simply no money to go to the schools. But there's something more at the same time. Under these same concepts that the salmon disappeared because of water flow, there's still an effort being made to pull down 3 electrical power dams and a flood control dam up on the Klamath. This is being done by the federal government. Secretary of Interior Salazar showed up about this time last year and announced that they wanted to dismantle these to save the salmon. And remember, these salmon had been affected by the salmon virus. and so their population.
Same excuse, another disaster coming our way.
Now, if they do that, this would create difficulty in irrigating the crops up north. It would create a dust bowl up there. Plus, it would remove the electrical power that was being generated by water. This is clean energy. And at the same time that we have a mandatory reduction of coal and fossil fuel powered electrical stations because of Assembly Bill 32. We're supposed to get rid of about a third of them. Well, this means California is being stripped of electrical power.
And water. Mary, are they trying to get rid of people?
I don't know. Who is they? I think that there are some people, some ecologists, who would like to reduce the human population. There are some people on the Delta or down below the Delta who feel that human development and the development of cities and agriculture impairs the wildness of the situation. They're unaware that fish have been farmed on this area for over 100 years, and that the Delta system, the canal system and so on, goes back to when the early Chinese settlers dug canals as well as put in a railroad for America, and that the agricultural system has continued on, and that even the Indians who were here before us and in Arizona and Utah put in irrigation systems.
Mary Winfrey, thank you so much for joining us. It seems like everything we've done that's been good is being turned around, and where do we go from here? Folks, what do you think? Can we save California's San Joaquin Valley by turning back the water on, turning those pumps on? Thank you, Mary, for joining us, and thank you all out there for tuning in. The Food Chain, see you next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.